Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle, and we're continuing our countdown to Super Bowl 51. We're here in the Media Center in Houston, Texas, looking ahead to the Atlanta Falcons against the New England Patriots, joined by my regular podcast partner and Sky Sports resident coach, Jeff Reinbold, and a very special guest, Tony Boselli, a Hall of Fame finalist this weekend, Pro Bowler, All-Pro offensive lineman, NFL team of the 1990s. Is that enough, Tony, or should
That's
I go on?
That's the point. We can start right there.
That's enough. Big weekend for you, though. Obviously, the game's coming Sunday, but Saturday they announced the class of 2017 for the Hall of Fame. You're among 15 finalists?
15 finalists. So, yeah, it's obviously a big deal. Mm. And it's cool and it's fun and all that. Something I have no control over. So I actually try not to think about it too much or worry about it. If it happens, it'll be life-changing.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, I'll wake up and
life won't change.
Won't change at all. So, it's fun. And another cool thing for me this weekend is working the Super Bowl for the first time with Westwood One. So I'll be on the sideline doing the Falcons. And that's – so it's a –
doing
possibly
the radio.
Going to be a great weekend.
You could have the
it's
best.
It's going to be a really good weekend no matter what.
You'll have a good weekend. Jeff, what Tony just said, they players like to control what they can control. That's out of his hands that bit.
Obviously, he's been well-schooled.
Yeah. Right?
Because, you know, this guy has a tremendous pedigree. Played at the University of Southern California and incredible success there. Was, you know, I think probably the prototypical left tackle. You know,
when
you talk about a university that produced Anthony Munoz and on and on and on. But I got to say this to you, Tony. I know it's been a big week, but even maybe bigger because your son signed a national letter of intent on Wednesday to play at North Carolina State.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't here. It was my second son. My oldest plays at Florida State. He signed last year. And then this year, Adam, my second son, and I was here. So I wasn't there. My wife was there. He signed to play football at NC State, plays tight end. And,
so.
It's cool for me as a dad, obviously,
seeing
my boys do that. And I love the game of football. I mean, it has been so good to me.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a great coach. We were talking before, one of my coaches at SC, John Matsko. So the game of football and the people I've been involved with have had such a positive influence on me. And now I get to see my boys go to great places like Florida State, NC State, great coaches to be influenced and help them.
Tell us about, we'll talk about the offensive lines in the Super Bowl and the game between the Falcons and the Patriots in a couple of minutes. But looking at the Jacksonville Jaguars, didn't work out for Gus Bradley. I was a big Gus Bradley fan.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, I was trying to be polite.
We're friends with him. He's a great guy.
He is a great guy, and I felt really bad for him that it didn't work out. What are you seeing? Doug Marrone, who was the offensive line coach this year, and also the interesting twist to this all, Tom Coughlin, your old coach from the Jags, being back in Jacksonville.
You know, it was a tough situation because Gus is a good football coach. And it just last year and kind of over the four-year process, they were trying to build something, didn't quite get there. And defensively, they took huge strides last year. Top, you know, number six defense in the NFL. But offensively, with Blake, it just never got going. So.
Yeah.
In the NFL, that's what happens.
Yep.
You know, good coaches get fired all the time. And now Doug Marrone comes in, and there's some similarities, some carryovers. You're going to have the two coordinators back, Nathaniel Hackett and Todd Wash. Todd did a great job last year. We'll see about Nathaniel Hackett because this will be the first time he has an opportunity to put his stamp on the offense. He was brought in midway through the year and took pieces of what Greg Olsen was doing and tried to fit it for him. But I think, Neil, you alluded to it. The biggest story is Tom Coughlin.
Right.
Obviously, the reputation he has as a coach, the Giants, what he did with us in Jacksonville initially. And anyone who knows Tom understands that he is not going to be the type of executive who's going to be hands-off.
He's not just going to be in the boardroom.
That is maybe a bigger understatement.
He is a great football guy.
So you still work around the Jags, don't you,
a little bit?
So
I've already met with him.
So does he make you nervous? Because tell us some of the rules that you used to have when you played for Tom Coughlin.
You know, I mean, he controls everything. When he was a coach, he controlled every aspect from what you wore to how you dressed in the stadium, on the road. He felt like he had the power to adjust the time in the universe to 5 minutes earlier.
All right, I got to ask this question.
No sunglasses.
If this is just urban legend, football legend, or if it actually happened. Two players coming late to a meeting. They are in a car crash and can't get to the meeting on time, and he still find him.
I cannot confirm or deny that that happened.
I got you,
Tony. Tell us. I love the story when you went to the Pro Bowl and Tom Coughlin was coaching at the Pro Bowl. Yeah. Tell us about that.
In '96, you know, we lose unfortunately the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. They go to the Super Bowl, and so back then it was the Pro Bowl was after the Super Bowl, and so the losing teams or the losing staff of the championship games went and coached it. And so that's going to be Tom and the staff. So we get over there. It's me, Mark Brunell, and Keenan McCardell. We're all Jaguars on that Pro Bowl. And so we go out to the first practice, and everyone, we're lined up for stretch, and everyone takes their helmets off. And, you know, and Keenan, Mark, and I all have our helmets on, chin strap, because that was the rule in Jacksonville. And I'm looking around. I'm going, I'm waiting for somebody to say something. So I just kind of take it off, put it next to us. But Tom was, he was just old school. And I don't know how else to explain him. But he, with all the craziness that he had, I mean, he used to, one of the rules was you couldn't wear white socks on the road. And I remember one time I asked him, I said, Coach, why does it matter what color socks I wear? That is not going to help me block Bruce Smith tomorrow.
Right.
And he goes, nope, it won't. But you know what? It makes me happy.
So you're
doing
it.
So you don't, I mean, but I tell people all the time, I didn't always like playing for Tom Coughlin. There was times I wanted to go in there and strangle the man. But I always respected him, and I always knew exactly where I stood with Tom. Yeah. And I think as a player, one of the things you want is consistency.
Exactly.
And so there was no mystery with Tom. Yeah. You didn't know where, there was never a question where I had to be, what I was supposed to be doing, what the expectations were. We were always so prepared what the team was going to do against us. And that's why he's successful. So you can argue with the nuances of rules, and that's all peripheral stuff. That's nonsense. It's him as a coach.
You know, there was a lot of talk when he was in New York about there was almost a player insurrection, and he listened to some of the veterans and actually changed his approach. Do you feel that now that you've had an opportunity to talk to him?
He's evolved as a person. I mean, I think that's what all good leaders do. I mean, we were a different team as an expansion team, really young. And it was probably the best thing for us. We needed to kind of be brought together quickly and through adversity and everything else. But he's a good leader, like I said. So he evolved, he listens. One thing about Tom, and this is what I've learned throughout the years, and you asked me, are you afraid of him? You know, and I'm not, because this is what I've learned about. What Tom respects people with conviction and who will be honest and who work hard and know what they're talking about. And so if you have an opinion, and you respectfully talk to him and approach him about something, and you have a strong conviction about it, he's fine with that. Yeah. He will listen, and he will have an open mind about that. And that's, you don't win two Super Bowls, go to two championships games with the expansion franchise, unless you are a good leader and successful coach.
And that's the key thing he can do. He can stand in front of that young Jags team and show those
we
Super
had
Bowl
to have
rings.
It, yeah.
Yeah. Let's look ahead to Super Bowl 51 then. And we had, you'll enjoy this, because we had Jags offensive tackle Kelvin Beecham on this set earlier this week, and we asked, how do you block Vic Beasley? And Jeff, he said you just beat him up, you stick an elbow in his back. And I thought back to how you played. I thought you'd be nodding wisely and agreeing with that. How do you cope with these?
Vic Beasley's a great pass rusher, but he's a speed guy, and so whenever I played a speed guy, if I think it's important for Vic Beasley early to establish a power move. Because if you can't have a counter or power, if you couldn't power me, then I was going to, I mean, there was no threat. Because athletically, I was going to stay in front of you and move my feet, and then I was going to try to beat the you-know-what out of you. because I was going to take your legs from you. And so I think in this game, Vic Beasley, he has 15 and a half sacks because he's a good pass rusher.
Yeah.
My recommendation to him against Cannon, who will be facing the right tackle, start with some power early and just try to rock him a little bit. Get him off his center just enough so that speed becomes more effective. And the other thing, with Tom Brady, speed rush always doesn't work because he's so good at climbing the pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't get the push in the middle, let Vic Beasley run around all day.
That's where it's key, isn't it, Jeff? Somebody like Rashaad Hageman in the middle might
those,
be a key
they've
player.
Got to get pushed inside and make Tom feel pressure from inside. You may not sack him once all day, but I agree with Tony. He's going to step up. He's going to climb the pocket. The vertical pressure is what's going to be key, those big guys pushing inside.
All right, guys, we've been playing this all week on the set. I'm going to give you some facts or statistics. You can tell me if they're meaningful or meaningless, because I'm full of some. And
like a game show.
It's like a game show. It's my one chance to
be. Do we win any money?
I'll tell you what I'm full of, Jeff.
Do we win any money if we get it right?
We'll find you something. We'll find you a free lunch just down that way. Yeah, just down there.
I've been eating there all week.
I know, me too. It's great, right? So the first one, Matt Ryan hit 8 different receivers in both playoff games and 12 times in the regular season. Is that meaningful or meaningless?
He had 13 touchdowns to 13 different guys, including an offensive lineman.
You have one up the stat master.
Yeah, I've raised you.
Wow.
And it is critical because Bill Belichick, what is he known for? Taking away what you want to do best. He's going to try to take away one thing. It's not going to be as effective because Atlanta has more weapons than most teams.
Right.
And look for the key as far as weapons and spreading out the ball, the backs out of the backfield.
Yes.
I think New England's going to play a two-high safety look, putting the linebackers on Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. That's an advantage to the Falcons.
Huge, huge mismatch.
All right, let's have this one for you, Jeff. Don't raise me with another stat, all right?
I'm impressed. He truly deserves a yellow jacket for that one.
Absolutely. The Patriots have not trailed in a game since week 12 against the Jets. That's more than 7 games, Jeff. Does that matter now, or is that all done?
I think that's kind of overblown when you get to this point. I mean, they're a mature football team, playing from in front, playing from behind. I thought it was interesting that Belichick did say yesterday in his press conference they can't get behind by 12 or 14 early in the game because they're not built for that. So, but this is a team with the Hall of Fame quarterback. Yeah. Guys have been there, done that. I don't think they'll panic if they have to play from behind.
All right, we've got about a minute left. So the last one, a recent poll of NFL fans showed that New England are the most unpopular team in the NFL. Is that meaningful, meaningless? Do they care? Do the Patriots care?
That doesn't make any difference. I love these statistics, and even with Deflategate, Tom's going to be more motivated. It's the Super Bowl. What motivation do you need? You go down in history if you win this game. It doesn't matter about deflated footballs, hated. Throw that all out the window. This game by itself is more motivation than any player ever need.
So I read in the paper this morning, the local Houston Chronicle, that somebody asked one of the players this week, is it a must-win game?
Well, if you don't win,
you're gonna guess yes.
It's over.
You're going to guess yes. Just as we wrap up, Tony, who do you like in this game to win?
You know, it's hard for me to go against the Patriots because of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, but I'm going to. I think this offense for Atlanta, I think it's going to be a track meet because I don't think Atlanta can slow them down because I don't think they'll rush very well in the middle because they're not great pass rushers inside. Right. But I think it's going to go back and forth. I think a late field goal by Atlanta wins the game.
All right. Well, we wish you all the best this weekend. Such a great ambassador for the Jacksonville Jaguars and always a regular visitor to the UK. That's Tony Baselli. We'll be back after the break with another special guest from Radio Row. We'll
see. Put a gold jacket on this guy.
Hello. Welcome back to Inside the Huddle. We're still here on Radio Row with a man who has been making the rounds. He's been very busy. He is our real-life Jerry Maguire, super agent Lee Steinberg. Lee, thanks for joining us. And you have been a busy man in here, and there's quite a buzz building now here in Super Bowl City.
There is. The later we get in the week, the more folks come in, and all of a sudden what's been a little bit quiet turns into a beehive, an inferno of noise and activity.
Jeff, this man, as I said, the Jerry Maguire movie was based on Lee, right?
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something. I met him through June Jones, who's a dear friend of mine and was one of Lee's clients. I want you to tell the story, Lee, of the time that you came to the Super Bowl and every quarterback in the game, if I'm not mistaken, every quarterback in the game, both starters and backups, were Lee Steinberg.
You need to learn to share, Lee.
I think that was 1994 or 5, but it was a game in Phoenix. And it was the Steelers versus Dallas. And so I had Neil O'Donnell, Mike Tomczak, Cordell Stewart on Pittsburgh. And I had Troy Aikman, Wade Wilson, Jason Garrett on the Dallas Cowboys. So that we had all the quarterbacks. But we also had defensive backs that were poised to pick them off.
Wow.
It was a win-win
situation. So, Lee, if we look at the quarterbacks this week, and obviously so much talked about with Tom Brady going for win number 5, Matt Ryan chasing his first Super Bowl. Is there a role for the agent to play with the quarterback this week? Tell us about that relationship between agent and quarterback.
So I've had the quarterback in the Super Bowl over and over again. Steve Young, Troy Aikman, Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Bledsoe, Kerry Collins, Neil O'Donnell. This week, the first thing the quarterback has to do is plan so that if they're going to go out early in the week, there's a shutdown date where they stop doing anything but focusing on football. Yeah. So maybe that's Thursday night, maybe it's Friday night, but it has to be at some point where they're not out on the town, they're not doing anything. So it's planning that so their focus goes that way. They have so many people in town, there's so many distractions, it could drive someone absolutely frantic. The second thing about it is this is also the Super Bowl of branding and marketing.
Right.
So
Sam will do it behind you.
This week you have so much press filing so many stories that an athlete who does well with the press and then performs dramatically in Sunday's game has a chance to cross over from the narrow genre of hardcore sports fans to become a household name. And that branding will continue as they leave. So if I have a quarterback in this game, I'm leading companies already to look at that player in anticipation that he might win the game. And it's the quarterback that's got the best chance to be MVP. It's the quarterback that is the leading man. So that quarterback then will come out of this and go on Jimmy Kimmel and be on Jimmy Fallon and be on a People magazine. And so you want to plan all that out. I remember once I had Troy Aikman, and I don't think you're supposed to do this, but
I mean, you definitely don't.
but we had him on all three morning network shows the next morning.
Jeff,
and they all wanted
the morning after the game.
Yes.
Wow. One of the things Lee alluded to there, there's got to be a cut-off point for the players. And we know that Thursday now, this is the end of the media obligations for the players. They must breathe a little sigh of relief.
And I'm going to tell you, the players, at this point, they're ready to play the game.
Yeah.
And I think what a great agent like Lee can do for a player at Super Bowl is he can take all of that distraction away, all of the ticket requests and where we're going to dinner and all of those things become the property of the agent so the athlete can just perform. Because Lee will tell you that your window in this game, your opportunity to make money in this game is very, very small. And this game, more than any game, provides that opportunity.
Lee, we talk about the role of the agent. And earlier this week, right at the start of Super Bowl week, Kristin Campbell, the agent for Devontae Freeman, there was a story emerged and she had come out and said that he needs to be paid like an elite back after the Super Bowl. Now, that's not something you'd argue with. It's 27 touchdowns in the last 2 years. But what do you make of the timing of that? Because Devontae then had to go into a whole kind of week of media obligations.
So the plus of saying something in this environment is that it gets the biggest play possible.
Right.
I've never been a fan of publicly negotiating because you're dealing at the end of the day with billionaires. And by putting somebody up against the wall and implicitly threatening them, it's not as if they're necessarily going to fold, be intimidated, or anything else. The public thinks that any dollars above $75,000 or $100,000 is a lot of money.
Sure.
So there's not a lot of sympathy for players being paid a lot of money. In our own practice, and I can't comment on somebody else, I try to keep those things very quiet and behind the scenes and never let a player demand get out there because at the end of the day, you don't want to be Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake, especially you've got, we just had an election in this country where the plight of people who were struggling economically was a major issue. So I don't want to be out there talking about it. And I've had more luck negotiating behind the scenes.
That's why you got all those quarterbacks. Jeff, we looked at Paxton Lynch. We spoke to Lee around the draft last year. Paxton Lynch will continue to develop in Denver. And I know you're interested to know really where Lee goes now with that. And I guess we'll wait and see where Paxton goes
again,
as well.
I think personally Paxton Lynch is going to have a tremendous NFL career. He has all the physical ability. He's got great work habits. He's a great kid, right? When we talked to Trent Dilfer the other day, what did he say to us, Neil? It's more than just playing quarterback. It's the
everything.
Entirety of the
you're
job.
You're the face. You're the spokesman. You're the leader.
I think Paxton Lynch is built for that. I really do. And I want to ask you about the new. You just signed another guy, Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech, coming out and going to be a client of yours. Tell us about him.
So with Patrick Mahomes, what you have is someone else I think can be a real franchise quarterback, someone they can build around for 10 to 12 years. He's 6'3", he's got a gun for an arm. There's video of him being on his knees throwing the ball 70 yards. He's got a gun. His father, a major league relief pitcher, for had a long career as a relief pitcher. He's got a gun for an arm. He's also mobile and can extend a play and can run like a running back. And he's very bright, natural leader. He's got all that. The question for any spread air raid quarterback is always 3-5-7 drop. So here's what's interesting. We now have a situation where in college more offenses are played that are spreads or air raids or some variation than our pro sets. So now you have the major amount of supply at the quarterback position, the most important position in a quarterback centric league, coming out of a system that's not played in the pros. And so over and over and over again, we get the same refrain. How quickly can they adjust? How quickly can they adjust? Probably not quite as fast
as if you played
pro set forever. But the point is, it's the same natural qualities that you'd be looking for. You know, height, strength, accuracy, mobility, ability to read defenses. None of them are going to be that quick on reading defenses. Warren Moon once told me that when he was in his first year, he ran around and threw the ball to the open receiver. He said his ability to read defenses was very limited. Every year it becomes clearer and clearer, in the same way that if you play the piano, there comes finally an epiphany.
Yeah.
It slows down.
That said, Jeff, and we saw it with Paxton Lynch. When we spoke to you, Lee, at the Super Bowl last year, Paxton was being talked about second round, and then the trajectory rises as we get closer to the draft, Jeff, for quarterbacks. We might see it with Patrick again this year.
Well, I think there's a couple things. First of all, it's supply and demand economics, right? There is not a tremendous supply of them. Everybody needs one. Not everybody. Most 28 teams need one. And so there aren't a lot of them, so they're going to get pushed up in the draft naturally. Then I think the other thing that for a guy like Patrick, and I saw it happen with Paxton, Lee did a great job of preparing Paxton for his pro days, for all of those workouts that they're going to get with the NFL clubs. And that's where you're going to really sell yourself, particularly when making the transition from the spread or the air raid to pro.
Lee, you mentioned you reeled off all of those quarterbacks you've had in the Super Bowl histories. Tell us about your thoughts looking at Tom Brady, where he kind of stands in the history of this great game.
I feel like that you start to have to give it to Tom Brady that maybe he's the greatest quarterback ever. And he's playing at this level at a time when 90% of quarterbacks are retired. And he does it because of his insane dedication to living a life that keeps him young. The discipline he has is off the charts. Now he's lost some Super Bowls, but and we have an unfortunate tendency, like with the Buffalo Bills, they were among the two best teams in football for four straight years. But because they lost the Super Bowl, in the mind's eye of some people, they were the worst team in pro football. But I think you just have to start to give it to him that to maintain this level of excellence is pretty unprecedented. And I would hate to be the Falcons giving Bill Belichick 2 weeks to prepare for their offense. It's an awful great offense. It's a Super Bowl. It should be balanced.
Right.
But how Belichick does some of this, I've watched him over and over and over again take away from teams what they do best and make it look different. So,
so you like the Patriots.
I do like the Patriots.
All right. Lee, one last question. We're almost out of time on Inside the Huddle today. One last in-depth, really serious question. Have you ever yelled, "Show me the money"?
That's what clients yell to me. That's what I hear in every airport, every time I go out to dinner, every day.
I'm sorry, that's okay. I'm not the first.
when you go to the colleges, and I know you speak to universities and kids that want to be agents, Did they ever, when you walked in the room, you ever get one from way up there in left field?
Yeah, there we go.
The reason is because even though that movie's been out for 20 years, it plays repetitively on TV. And so I would have thought it would have shelf life gone, but it just keeps playing and playing. Thank God.
There we go. Yeah,
he's going.
All right, guys, we are out of time. Jeff Reinbold, thanks to Lee Steinberg. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for joining us on this edition of Inside the Huddle. We'll be back tomorrow with more from Houston. Until then, bye for now. Bye-bye.